everybody.
I'm an addict and my name is Thomas.
Thomas!
Can you guys hear me back there?
Yeah.
I've never been accused of being soft-spoken, so. First, let's thank the committee one more time. Let's give the newcomer a hand. Yeah. This is my first time in Oklahoma, so I heard you Okies could get loud. I'm taping this for my people in my tribe in Clearwater, Florida, so how loud do you guys get? We got baseball, we got hockey, and we got football in Tampa. We don't have basketball, so I'm kind of an honorary Thunder fan. So my clean date is 12-13-13. I just celebrated 10 years. The reason I tell you that, I went to my first NA meeting when I was about 16 back in 1981. I never put together 30 days until I got clean on 12-13-13. I spent 2 months in the mental hospital. 1 month was in detox. The other month was a 28-day program. The day I got out, I went to a halfway house. That night, I went to an NA meeting. Still my home group today.
Yeah.
I walked in that meeting, the first person to come up to me and ask me if I wanted a cup of coffee was Patrick.
Uh-huh.
Following Tuesday night, I asked him to be my sponsor. He's been my sponsor ever since. So I heard it said when the student's ready,
That's right. The
teacher appears. And it's been a wonderful relationship. And we're like two old women. We were fighting yesterday, you know, we were arguing. And we shared about it. Any relationship, if there ain't no arguing, and I mean, he's my best friend. He's taught me how to be a father to my children. Because he has a son my daughter's age, and his son has never seen him use. So he's taught me how to just listen sometimes to my kids. He's taught me how to be a father, a brother to my sister. He taught me how to be a man. This is the only thing, you come in here and if you could learn how to be a parrot and follow directions, you could get clean. I'll tell you what, I remember when I first got clean and I shared it. We did this in March, we did it in Helen, Georgia, but you guys are much cooler. I gotta thank Casey and Jeff. They picked us up at the airport. We took a red eye yesterday. We got to spend the day like we did in Helen, Georgia. We spent the day before downtown. We got to spend yesterday downtown, and we got to go to the bombing site. And again, it's my first time in Oklahoma City. I remember that day, and it was a somber. I grew up in New York City. This ain't a Florida accent, by the way. I'm trying to pick up an Oklahoma accent. I don't think that's going to happen by the time I leave. No, but I remember him telling me, you know what? And to this day, I remember him telling me, don't keep your cell phone out at a meeting. Don't side chatter. Don't, you know, you sit down. Don't go hugging people when the meeting's about to start. Sit down, shut up, and listen. Well, it's 10 years, and I keep trying to find him. I try to catch him with a cell phone. I haven't found him with his cell phone out in my tenure. And I'd like to say that he invited me here. I begged to come. I was like, come on, man. I'm your favorite sponsee. I'm your chia pet. You know, I say I'm his chia pet. He knew me. He's helped me since I right out of the box. But again, I have Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. I'm a low-bottom addict. I'm a junkie. I never got clean before. So what? I just got to use the tangible stuff. What got me clean? I still go to 5, 6, 7 meetings a week.
Right.
I work steps with him. I just follow his lead. You know, if I had a sponsor that was, you know, picking up newcomers and playing with his cell phone, I'd probably be doing that. But I follow his lead. He's a wonderful guy. He's still, to this day, he just did it Tuesday night. There was a newcomer there, and after the meeting, I see him over in the corner talking to the newcomer. I still have a problem with that. You know, I got things to do after the meeting. So again, he still offers a coffee to the newcomer. He took me to my first concert. He took me to my first picnic. He took me to my first Frickner, which is our convention. He saved my life. All right? So with that, this is going to be a wonderful experience for you guys. Patrick is a wonderful guy. With that, I introduce Patrick.
Thank you for those kind words.
I love them.
I love you too. Knock them out.
All right. What's up? I'm not good at holding microphones. Now can you hear me back there?
Yeah.
All right. Friday night in the 405. What do we got going on here? Yeah. Nothing but love here. I hope somebody can keep track of time. You going to do the time for me thing, Rudiger?
You bet.
Just let me know when I'm close.
Yeah.
And I'll just keep going. You got nothing. You don't want to beat up your sponsor on the sponsee thing, right? Keep talking, guy. So, any rate, a little nervous. Yeah, it ain't too bad. It's like a half a hit. Remember those little bitty ones? You get a little bolt? That's a little bolt here. The reason why I'm not that nervous, because we prayed, didn't we not, Casey? And I want to thank Jeff for picking us up at the airport. By the time we got to our rooms, I was crying. Because of the love that I was experiencing from this area. Thank you for introducing the committee members, because without the committee, you wouldn't have this thing. If you look around the room here, which I did last night, I had the distinct pleasure of touching each one of these banners. Made sure I didn't have any chocolate on my fingers, but I'm an aesthetic kind of guy, and I get the feeling of things. And I touched that first one, which was handmade and painted. And I said to somebody else, I says, imagine if these banners could talk. To give you the history of what's going on with this convention. Imagine how many lives are being touched by the messages that you're hearing in the gathering of addicts. One person helping another. It's a beautiful thing. I know we got some newcomers here. Can you stand up, raise your hand, and make some kind of noise? Yeah. Yeah. You know what you're applauding? You're applauding the future of Narcotics Anonymous right there. There's your committee members. There's your sponsors. There's the vice chairs that keeping this shit going on. I swore. Is that a problem? If you got a problem, you swearing, I swear. I'd like to tell you I'm working at it, but I'm not. So anyway. I got trash mouth. What can you say?
Fuck.
So, yeah, fuck that shit, right? Come on. I was at the ladies at her Zoom meeting. She said, I'm just going to swear. But I do try to work on it. So I believe in spending a little bit of time telling you what got me up here. If I wanted to follow you with the breadcrumbs. That I am a drug addict, that is for sure. I may not look like one, but deep down inside, I'm a stone-cold crackhead, that's for sure. Started out wanting to have fun, just a regular kid that liked to play baseball, and I was doing pretty good playing baseball. And then somebody brought some marijuana, and I started smoking marijuana and eating Twinkies, and I didn't want to go practice baseball anymore. So not only did I get chubby, I just got lazy, and I gave up on a sport that my father really wanted me to be a baseball player. He truly did. And he was disappointed and took his disappointment out on me ferociously. He was a prick. He was pissed off at his life, and he took it out on me. And beer came on the stage and started out with the quart, 40 boy, if you will, and then 6 packs, and then 12 packs, and then pretty soon we're rolling kegs down the street. And, just adolescent stuff, the parties that you have in the backwoods, nothing harmful, pick up a girl, Susie Skeets, oh, I had something, you know, like, I touched the boob, you know, I was like, you know, I was so excited about that stuff at 14 years old, you know. Yeah, it didn't look like National Geographic books, but it felt pretty good, you know. The laughter's identification, guys, you know that, right? We know what a National Geographic book is. So, Miss Uganda, man, that kept me up at night. You do get that, right? Okay. Anyhow, so, you know, drugs followed a path. It became more socially acceptable to smoke more pot, and then different varieties of drugs like Thai stick, hash oil, and I'm cheap. I didn't want to buy that stuff. My brother sold it, so I stole from my brother. And then he said, "You're stealing my pot." I said, "No, I'm not. I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, you're right, you got me." He says, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to show you how to sell it." And my brother showed me how to sell marijuana. At the age of 16, I had a bank account in the car that my parents never knew how the hell I got. So I was a pretty good dealer. You know, so if you don't think you have any skills, you're a good dealer, aren't you? You know how to negotiate things here. So that's exactly what I did in high school, and I was very popular in high school because I was known as Patrick the Pop Boy, you know, and I could keep walking up. I looked like shit, you know, but nobody cared, but they liked me because of being Patrick the Pop Boy, and that was a popularity thing. So I ran through life, you know, being Patrick the Pot Boy. I had long hair, believe it or not. I did look good when I was younger. I had that mustache. I had that stylish, what do you call that thing, the shake? What are you looking? Mullet! Yeah. You got it. You win. Right. I had the mullet. I looked like Magnum P.I. type deal, you know. And I was stoner. I was pretty cool. And I was popular because not of who I was, but because of what I had. Women, you can identify with that one, right? That's just the way it is. You know, I didn't care about you. What do you got? And I want some. Give me some. Give me some. Give me some. You know? And I will tell you whatever you want. It's like, give me some. Give me some. Give me some. And that's what people were doing in my life. They didn't care about me personally. Either did I. I mean, like I was trying to kill myself. And literally, I did try to kill myself when I was 12 years old. I had a speech impediment. I can't even do it now. I had a speech impediment, which means that I stuttered. And I was gauntly. I didn't have nice clothes. I was kind of ridiculed as a teenager, which teenagers are known to do. You know, teenagers are brutal against each other. Yeah. If you don't have the right clothes, you know, like that song, you know, I'm a creep. All that stuff, that grunge music really radiated to me. I felt like shit. And you validated that, what my dad was telling me. It's like, oh, I'm no good. And I remember going up to a local playground after everybody got into the car, the popular kids, and they shut the door on me. They said, we don't want to hang around with you. And there I was standing on a street corner, alone, with my flooded pants, because I wore floods, because they were hand-me-downs. And I went up to a playground, and I took the belt off, and tried to hang myself on the slide. You know, the slides back then were metal. You put that metal bar. I think it was 13 years old, trying to kill myself because I didn't feel good enough that I qualified in your world. And this is why when you do such nice things for me, I cry. Because I'm loved. You don't even freaking know me, and you let me use your car. I was telling Thomas, they don't even know if I have a license. forgot to check if he's got a license, doesn't he? But here I am driving their car, and I'm doing like 40. You know, like I'm going to get free cheese. Oh, no. Drexel on. I'm going to make sure I'm parking, playing for parking things, because I don't want to tarnish a relationship. Thank you for trusting me. Does he trust me or does he trust the process? I think he trusts the process. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because individually, we're good people. I believe addicts. I believe in all kinds of addicts. I go into the prison today, and these are men just like me that have problems, that their family walked away from them. But I'll always tell them, I'm here because I believe in you. And they look up, like, really? I said, yeah, I come here. I'm not paid for this. I'm not part of the system. Last Christmas, I was there for Christmas. I held a meeting for them. And they're like, thank you. I said, you kidding me? Thank you for being here. I need them more than they need me, believe it or not. That's why I'm so glad of the newcomers. I was talking to a gentleman, it's his first year clean. He was here last year, came to hear a message, and he's coming back. Yeah. Love that shit. And then he's telling me all the things I want to hear. I said, man, if you were dating, you got me. You know? He's talking sponsor, he's talking home group, he's talking service commitment, he's talking, man, I can't. And I'm like, yeah, I like this guy, you know. The hardest part is when you run into somebody and you want to offer this message of hope and they're like, ah, I don't want to do service. Ah, I don't want to touch base with a sponsor. I got trust issues. Oh, you got addict issues. And this is what we try to overcome is addict issues by replacing them with the theme of our convention. The nature of recovery. So when understand the nature of recovery, if you understand the nature of addiction, let's just do opposites. Right? What is recovery? It's not by nature. Thank you. It's not in my human nature to be nice. It's not in my human nature to moderate something. It's not in my human nature to be generous and kind, caring and compassionate. Where do I learn this? Right here. Because those teachers, I did go to parochial school, their intent was well. I just wasn't receptive. Thomas mentioned it, you know. When the student's ready, the teacher will, what the fuck am I doing here? Which is which? Okay, that's a different thing in my jigger. All right. Anyway, there's a whole lot of work being up here with all this shit, you know. It's all right. I'm not under investigation or indictment this time. You didn't get that. You're young. Don't worry about it. Keep coming back. those days are long gone, but they can come right back if I quit doing what I'm doing. So, at any rate, I was getting in a little bit of my history. And I was doing okay, and I met a girl. It's always a girl, right? And she thought I was cool. Can't blame her for that. I am kind of a cool guy. You know? And we shacked up. And I slipped one past the goalie. Got her pregnant, you know? And I'll never forget bad analogy, you don't have a hockey team, but we do. I got her pregnant. Right, we'd say slipping past the goalie. And so I remember I'm stoned and I'm sitting in the couch, and she says, she comes back from the doctor and she says, well, I said, well, what? Looking kind of chubby. No, I ain't going to say that, right? She says, I'm pregnant. I said, oh, fuck. That's what I said, literally, like, instead of saying, oh, I'm happy, I'm like, oh, shit. Another me. Scared shitless. So I went out and celebrated like a good old addict did and got all messed up. And I said I was going to go down to Florida to have one last hurrah. And that didn't turn out too well. I got wasted, and I was staying with my brother, and he sent me backpacking. And it's sad because I could have been a good husband if I had the tools, but I don't have the tools to be a husband. I want to be a husband. I have hope that I see married couples. It's attainable. But at that time, I wasn't ready for anything like that. I was too selfish. I wanted my addiction. I didn't know that there was another way of life, you know. I used to be a high school teacher. I thought that was going to be all right. I used to be in front of many students. I was known as Mr. C, and I used to teach history. But I'm smoking crack before I go to school. I know. How dare you? That was me. School starts at whatever time, 6:45. I'm smoking crack right to the last minute, 6:30. And then got to get one more in the parking lot, right? And I'm up in front of the classroom trying to teach students. And if you remember high school, whatever, they use chalk. I'm a crackhead. That shit's all over the floor. This is how I taught. I And then they asked me to be the third base coach. Baseball. What do they put on the sidelines? White shit! And I'm finding rocks in the white shit, and they're never there, but you gotta look, right? So I tried real hard to be a normal person, a teacher, and a boyfriend. It just, the drugs were always all-encompassing. There was always that barrier. I could tell you, yeah, I'm gonna try to quit, but there was no effort. I didn't have any tools. Any people who are a little older or my genre, Nancy Reagan used to have a saying. What was it? Exactly. What did she tell you to do? Exactly. Nothing. Just say no. Tell me what to do. Here's the hit. Narcotics Anonymous. Just say no, but go to a meeting. But you're going to get a list. Call these people. But get a service commitment. Find a sponsor. Get involved. It gives you some direction. You just can't tell a fish, don't swim. You got to give them something to go with. And this is what Narcotics Anonymous does. I had a guy, a friend of mine, Mike Mosier, I can mention his last name, because he died clean. Great man. You know how Thomas kind of lifts me up and says all some kind of great things, and what the fuck does he know? Mike Mosier was the guy that would always answer my call after I got done using. I said, Mike, I did it again. He says, I'll be right over. No, tomorrow. I get some rest. No, tomorrow. Someday can become a day of the week. Do you understand that? Someday can become a day of the week. We haven't figured out how to put it on our calendar. Someday I'll do that. Someday may never ever happen. It may be the day that you read about me. If that. Someday could turn into no days. Analysis paralysis, what does that do? Nothing. I overthink things. If we don't take any action, nothing happens. So anyway, I call Mike. I stole my brother's car. February 16th, 1996, and the cops showed up, finally. After all those times looking for them, they actually showed up. I was tweaked out, and I saw these flashes. Like, I used to see flashes all the time. You ever try to find cops through glass block windows? That's me. You know, they're always out there all the time. Well, they finally showed up this night, and they said, what the fuck are you doing? I says, oh, man, it's terrible. I can't stop. And they asked, do you want help? For some reason, I said, yeah, okay. And they took me to a hospital. And in the hospital, I told them that I quit drinking for six years, which I did. That's part of my story. I quit drinking. I was on the marijuana maintenance program. I'd go to bars. I'm like, hey, what's up? How you doing? Got happening, you know? And I'd sit there and drink, you know, cranberry juice. I'd have my finger going, you know, and the lime. What's up, babe? How you doing? But I'm smoking pot. Sooner or later, that shit comes back to bite you in the ass because it's a drug. And that's what happened with crack cocaine. I was doing well. And then Johnny Danner says, try this. I said, oh, cool. And it was in a can. I'll never forget it. He had this can crunched up in it. I hit that motherfucker. I'm like, oh, National Geographic book all over again. I'm like, oh, I was on fire. I was like, wow, this is great. You got to give me some more of this, you know? And I became a crackhead. My pipe could not slow down. I couldn't get enough of that stuff. I don't recommend smoking crack. How's that? You won't read that on the label. So anyway, Michael Mosier, I quit drinking for 6 years. The hospital wouldn't allow me into their treatment facility because I told them I had quit drinking for 6 years. And they said, there's nothing we could do to help you. So I'm walking out. I don't have a jacket. This is February in Buffalo, New York. Pretty cold, just like this climate here. And I'll never forget that moment. Some of you are here because of that moment. Whatever your moment is, it's your moment. This was my moment. I'm leaving. And there's the door to go outside. And there's a phone booth. there's a door, there's a phone booth. And I'm looking at the door, I'm thinking, all right, I just got to go outside and go make it happen, because as an addict, I know it doesn't make a difference. I will get high. There is no in my vocabulary. Doesn't happen. I'm going to make it happen. But there was a phone. And I mooched a quarter. They had pay phones back then, for those of you who don't know that. There's things on a wall that you picked it up and you had to dial shit, you know? And then you put a quarter in there. And I called Mike Mosier. And he says, I'll be right there. And he showed up. And he took me to treatment. And haven't got high since. Please don't applaud me. That applaud goes for you, who believes in a hopeless addict like myself. Because I had no hope. I didn't go to treatment to get clean. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. You go into treatment, my facility was a 28-day facility. I did 10 days in a detox, and then they shipped me out to a 28-day rehab. Food was good. It was creepy. You got these counselors telling you, oh, you got to fucking die out there. I was like, ah. And I remember being in a circle and they say, look to your right, look to your left, that person's going to get high. And I said, they'll be fucking eyeballing me. You know? And I caught an attitude. I said, oh no, I'm going to stick to this program. I'm going to do this shit. Just out of resentment, I guess. And I got out of treatment March 25th, 1996, and they told me to go to a meeting. I went to a meeting. It was Karen's birthday. That was baby's mama. Her name was Karen, and it was her birthday, and she hadn't seen me in 40 some odd days, and she says, oh, is this what this is going to be like? I haven't seen you. I'm pregnant, and it's my birthday. And my biological clock is ticking. You know, girls, how you do that shit. You kind of do that. Whatever. And I says, this is what they told me to do, to go to a meeting. I says, I'm going to come back. She says, whatever. Went to a meeting, and they were nice, just like what I'm experiencing here. They offered me a cup of coffee, and that's why I'll always chase somebody down for a cup of coffee. I will treat you just the way that I'm being treated. Speaking of coffee, that's some badass shit you got back there, brother. I had some death coffee. He was my new crackhead. I'm like, hey, I'm tapping on his window. Where'd he go? Where'd he go? Where'd he go? That's my boy. I see him back there. Good shit. So anyway, we'll get to that later. So my first meeting, people were nice. I don't know what they said, but they gave me a phone list and they said to call. And I called. They were happy that I called. And they said, I'll see you Tuesday night. We look forward to seeing you. So they're saying things that I haven't heard in a long time. Thank you. We look forward to seeing you. Out there in the dead world, that shit doesn't happen. You again, if they're answering, what the F do you want? Did you know what you did? You know, and it's always the accusations, which were pretty accurate, if I recall. So people were warm. They were loving, just like the love that I'm feeling at this convention. You know, and I will always be grateful for that, and I try to carry that wherever I go. You know, Thomas, he took a picture. I was talking to a homeless guy. Just because a person is homeless doesn't mean he's hopeless. That's right. Who the hell am I to walk by that person and brush off? God put you in my life. I didn't ask for it. How do we know? This is just me being on a soapbox thing, so don't mind. It's nothing in the literature. But we never know whose life we're going to touch if we don't touch that person in some shape or form. I'm not saying don't take your wallet. I don't say, here you go, go shopping, you know. Spend some time with somebody. Our words can save somebody's life, because it was Mike Mosier's words of encouragement that saved my life. We never know whose life we're going to touch. So reach out and touch someone. Just be careful who you're doing it. Make sure she's not young. I got a story with that one, too. Got a problem with girls. I love you women, you know. And by the way, you women are very attractive here. Guys, you're lucky. I'm from Florida. Those girls are kind of beat up. They got rough faces. You got beautiful complexions. Yeah, give those women an applause. Come on, guys. They're beautiful. Aww. You're so modest, too. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I went to meetings. Going to meetings. Let's get to the girl story. So I got 18 months, hot 18 months. I know what I'm doing, right? I got the swag, got the NA swag. What's up? What's up? How you doing? I got my key tag hanging down there, and we start. There's a meeting that I actually helped start. Oh, I got things going. I'm part of the service. These two girls came into the meeting, and they were like, "We're really happy to be here, and we, you know, we want to get clean." I was like, "Hello." Put the dope, but doesn't mean my shit doesn't work. That's out there. It's all. And Reader's Digest show. What I didn't do was tell my sponsor my intentions, what I was thinking. And that son of a bitch came back to bit me in the ass in a big way, because when they had a convention up in Buffalo, I says, "Hey, you want to go to the convention? We could rent a room together and hang out as friends." All right, you know, they never showed up where we're supposed to meet. That following Monday, the police contacted me. "What's up?" "Well, guess what? We got a complaint against you. You know those girls that you were talking to, that you were putting those moves on? They're in high school." "Oh." "I know, you dirty son of a bitch, you. They went to their guidance counselor complaining that they couldn't get clean because of the guy at the meeting." Me, 18 months clean. So I was basically this close for being on a sexual predator list, so on and so forth. My brother was an attorney. We got it washed out, so on and so forth. Baby's mama found out about that one, right? So I get 18 months clean. And her stepdad works in the police department in some shape or form. And I was trying to keep it hush-hush, you know. Nothing's going on. And she says, "Come home. I need to talk to you." I'm like, "Oh, fuck." You know that call. Oh, shit. So she says, "You know what? I put up with the crack use. You stole my mother's jewelry. You chased me around the house with a knife. And now this shit." She says, "It's time, we're going to split. We're going to split the house," she says. "You get the outside, I get the inside. See you later." So there I am at 18 months with no place to live. But I'm clean. And I did not want to go to meetings. I embraced my sponsor like never before. I embraced my grand sponsor like never before. And I learned a lot of valuable lessons. But one of those was when I went to my grand sponsor, I says, "You don't like me, do you?" He says, "I love you. I just don't like what you did." There's a difference between the person and the behavior. And this is what we're dealing with in recovery, is a behavioral problem. We're all good people. We got bad. I got bad behaviors. I'm not pointing at you, but I think you qualify for this if you're here. We have a behavioral issue. And just because I quit using dope doesn't mean all the behaviors have stopped. They came right in the door. They're here right today. I just haven't acted out on them. My defects of character follow me just like my shadow. Okay, it's there. But the steps help me to not act on those. The most important step I got to say is, I got a problem. And that's admitting. You know, right now I started a 21-day fast from television. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is when you stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning watching Family Guy and you're tired to go to work because, "Oh, I'm tired. I got nothing better to do." Bullshit. You're lazy. It's apathy and procrastination. I didn't like it, so I said I made a commitment. I did this last year with bread. Still on a fast from bread for a year. I did this before with cigarettes. I no longer am a smoker. Fucking Nicorette. That's a kicker. That's another buzz, you know. I'm addicted to Nicorette, though, but I've had three today. I'm trying to moderate that. And sugar, another one. I used to get, anybody like Oreo cookies?
Oh, my God.
One person? Oh, come on. Yeah, you liars. Look, come on. How about Oreo double stuff cookies? Yeah, here we go. Now, here we go. Ha, 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 ha. I bought 4 bags of Oreo double stuff cookies. Oh. 4 bags with my son, and I'm clean. Emmett's visiting me at my house that I have now, and I told him, "You take 2 bags, you hide them. We'll take 2 bags, and we'll share them for the rest of the night." OK? Guess where I was at 2 o'clock in the morning, looking through his room, trying to find the other two bags. Couldn't stop. And I'm saying to myself, son of a bitch, isn't this like looking for crack cocaine? Exactly. And I found him, of course. You know. And the next day I get up, I says, I cannot do this anymore. And I shared about it at a meeting. I says, I have an addiction to cookies. And I haven't had a cookie since. I gave up sugar 13 years ago. Yeah. Now, I know there's sugar in a lot of different things, but I don't selectively say I will have sugar. Like, it's crazy how, we'll say God works or the devil works. I had that discussion earlier. I went on a cruise when I chose to give up sugar. If you've ever been on a cruise, that is just a smorgasbord of gambling, drinking, and eating, right? I walk into this cruise ship, and there's a mountain of desserts. I said, motherfucker. I says, this is it. This is how I'm going to die, on the poop deck. I could see the article. Patrick Clohessy cleaned up his drug addiction but died of a heart attack from sugar. You know? Great headlines that would be. And what did I do? I prayed. I said, God, just like I was doing over here, God, please help me. Because I can't do anything. The more I pray, the less I think, the better off I am. Prayer works when you pray. And it's not a pussy-ass thing. It may sound real hippie-ish, but, you know, I pray. Because I need God. I'm not him. And I hated people that love God. You're a pussy. No. There's 80 billion people in the world. There's only one of you. And God has uniquely created you for something special. Think about that. Of all the people in the world, He chose you to get clean, to change your life, to be the person that you truly, He designed you to be. I know it's not being a drug addict. What's the benefits of being a drug addict? Just another statistic. Today, we can be responsible, productive members of society. Come on. So today I'm actually an usher at my church. I'm not endorsing a religion, I'm just saying I go to a church, and which is great. People like me today, and I'm not stealing anything. I do think about it though. Yeah, you know, ladies, you have a purse, you leave it open, I look, still to this day. I'm still got that dope addict thing. If I see two people standing on a street corner, they could be Jehovah's Witnesses. Oh, they're selling. Oh, yeah. You know, they could have a collar on. It's like, it's just a cover. You know, I think like a dope addict all the time here. So that's always the nature of my thing. So at any rate, what do I struggle with today? I have some health issues. I have a back problem. I have a stomach problem. I've been diagnosed with spinal stenosis. It's a big word, sounds fancy, but scared the shit out of me when they told me. And the doctor comes back after reading this MRI thingamajigger. And you know how doctors are. They always got to fucking play things up, right? They got to put their glasses down like this. And she says, well, you know, this isn't really good here. She says, I noticed you have some inflammation. You got some scar tissue. And I said, well, get to the punchline. What do you want? You know? And she says, you have spinal stenosis. I says, can we fix it? She says, no. Ooh, gets quiet, right? What do I do? She says, I will show you a system of how to live with this without going through as much pain. You know, I said, son of a bitch, I heard that 27 years ago. I can identify with that. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
She says, yeah, I want to show you a way. So what I do some stretches. I avoid particular behavior. When it hurts, I slow down. And I truly believe the God of my understanding, He shakes things on the outside to slow me down. Because I was like a raving maniac with, you know, I'm 60 years old. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm an old guy. I got more time in the rearview mirror than I do in the front. So I'm trying to play makeup time, catch up time, you know. Got to work a lot, got to do everything. Okay, because I ain't got much time left. God says, you know what, sure. Why don't I determine that? And since you can't figure this one out, I'm going to slow your ass down. You know? I'll give you a little spinal stenosis there. And you know he does that shit. He'll work wonders in your life if you just allow him. And that's what's going on. So it slows me down. Instead of doing 10 things a day, I do 5. But I do them with the same passion and love that I would do with the 10 things. It's just that I'm old. I gotta, you know, take care of my health a little better. I used to be heavy. I like to talk about health. Health. That's always important to me because I used to be 268 pounds. Food never tasted so good. Six pieces of pizza, you know, and Oreos, double size this, double size that. So I go to the doctor because I go to doctors. I like them today. They're kind of cool. You know, just be nice to me. And he does his little examination, you know, and he says, well, this cholesterol number, he gives me a cholesterol. And I was like, what does that mean? He says, you're a candidate for a heart attack. I said, well, that's not good. He says, no. I said, what do you want me to do? You know, I get pissy. What do you want me to do? He says, salads. Okay. Oatmeal. Okay. Exercise. Okay. So he gives me this list of things to do, and I said, man, this is going to be tough. And he says, well, what about your son? Yeah, he's a little chubby, too. He says, that's not what I mean. He says, he likes pizza, too. You know, we got to do this thing together. Cookies, you know. You know? He says, that's not what I mean. He says, don't you want to be around for your son? Do you want your son to have to take care of you? And in my mind, I'm thinking, you selfish son of a bitch. It's always about me. So have that extra slice of pizza. You're not thinking about the next person that may have to take care of you, Patrick. Smoking cigarettes. I ain't hurting nobody today. You know? Do I want my son to have to take care of me? No. I want my son to live his life. Not to say, oh, I gotta go change dad's diaper again. You know? I don't want him to do that. So I went on this campaign to lose weight and exercise. So I used to be 268 pounds. I've incorporated a healthy diet. First thing I have to say is no. Like, you've provided us some desserts back there. Wonderful. I just don't touch the shit. Thank you for the basket. Had a whole bunch of candies in there. And went to that guy. The first step, this program tells me I do not have to say yes to everything. I could say no. I do not want that. I don't feel guilty about it because it's about my health. It talks about it in our literature, and I'm really big on our literature. I love the basic text, and also I love our book, Living Clean. And I thank you. And I always like to bring our literature out here and there because it's important that I'm not making this stuff up. In the Living Clean book on page 97, with self-acceptance comes willingness to creatively explore new directions. It wasn't my goal to go to the gym and be a gym guy. But it made sense because I needed to do something creative and healthy. And I'll be at the gym and I have young guys, like, you guys are younger, and they'll say, geez, Pat, you look really good for your age. And I'll say, thank you. But then I have to ask the question, well, how do you think I am? Ah, 64, get the fuck away from me. So they're always aging me, but at any rate, the point of the matter is, if we do not take care of our health, ladies and gentlemen, okay, you've been given a gift of recovery. If we do not take care of our health, what does this mean if we're in the hospital and we die early? Primary purpose is to stay clean and help another addict. If I could stay healthy, that's more addicts I can help. Stick around a little longer, right? So I learned to apply the steps to the program, you know, apply the program to any issue that it caused me pain. Sugar. I used to shoplift. Then I switched price tags. That's a great story, switching price tags, right? My son had a rabbit, which meant that I had a rabbit, right? I got money, but I don't want to pay for rabbit food, so I'm paying for bird seed, which is, it goes from 49 cents to 69 cents. That's a lot of money per pound. I got three credit cards in my pocket. I got a shitload of money, but it's about principle, right? Big corporations making too much money off this rabbit food fucked up. So I'm scooping. And it's like, whatever happened, that one day I just said, I rung up rabbit food at the regular price. And I go to cash out. I says, I'm paying for rabbit food. I says, yeah, okay. This is rabbit food I'm paying for. Like, the manager's like, no big deal, dude. But to me it was, because I paid full price. I was expecting balloons to come out. Thank you, sir, for paying full price for this food. So I quit justifying and rationalizing by switching price tags. You know, it just wasn't working out for me. I can get caught on principle, and principles, I get stuck in that principle thing, and it's just, it's no good, because I think I'm right, and I suffer from what? Self-deception. I can deceive myself into thinking that I don't need to pay for something that is, you know, it's your product. If I want it, I need to pay the price for it. Doesn't make a difference how much you're getting it for. You're selling it for the price that you want to sell it for. Who the hell am I to determine that? You know, when I got clean, I got cheap. I did. I mean, I'm spending all this money on dope, and all of a sudden, I'm fucking paying fucking $27 for jeans. Fuck that shit. I'm going to steal them. You know? I was a thief for about 6 years in recovery. You know how you plan it out? You wear one big pants that's very big, and you wear like four different ones. See you later. You're walking out, doing it like that. I was stealing. Stealing credit card information, and I didn't get caught. It was a spiritual principle that hit me that said, you know, this isn't right. And to make the changes without having the consequences. You know, that thing with the woman, I mean, those two young ladies at 18 months, thank God, it's a horrible story. It truly is a horrible story, but I have to tell that, not for you, but for me, because it keeps me sharp. If I think for any moment I'm exempt from any of this bullshit, I'm out the door. I've been doing this for a couple years. Does it mean that using drugs will never make sense? It made sense before. What keeps me on track is the step work. The 10th step will tell me my defects of character will back me in a corner that I may not get through clean. 10th step is an inventory. I take a daily inventory. I had an argument with my sponsee the other day. I inventoried that. You know, we disagreed. I didn't like the way that I handled it. It's not a big deal, you know. But to me, it's a behavior. And if I'm not looking at my behaviors and talking about my behaviors, soon it'll just run rampant. And I'll justify and rationalize shit. And sooner or later, I'm sponsoring myself. And if you've ever sponsored yourself, I'm sure you don't have one white key tag, right? You still with me? All right now. Another thing I wanted to talk about was relationships. Ooh, got quiet in here. Relationships can be a terribly painful area. The adjective word is can. It can be a terribly painful area. They can also be something beautiful and wonderful. So my first sponsor said, I'm going to teach you to have three relationships. First one was going to be with him. Second one was going to be with God. Third one was going to be with me. And the third one blew me out the way, because I don't know who I am. I'm just, I'm going along here, going to meetings. I'm like a tumbleweed. Tell me what to do, tell me what to do, tell me what to do. And by doing some step work, I'm learning about who I really am. My assets, my defects, my shortcomings, the good qualities, the bad qualities, the things that fire me up, and areas that I can improve. So now I have a relationship with myself. I know who I am. And I think, I'm ready for a girl. I'm going to give it a try, you know. So I'm a single guy. I'm not advertising, ladies, relax. I know, he's such a flirt. I'm not. But I'm single, and I'm dating. And, you know, sit down talking to this girl, and oh boy, she talks. I like the way she eats french fries. This is the one, this is the one, this is the one. Kind of move her in. This is great. Oh, look, she blinked. Oh, this is great. You know? Get all excited about the little things there. And, you know, you get a couple months in a relationship. Man, I just love this chick. She's the greatest thing. She's the greatest thing. And you walk away, you go to the bathroom, and she's going through your phone like, what the fuck happened to you? She turned into something that I didn't want her to be, you know. So at 20 years clean, I moved an alcoholic into my house. raving alcoholic. Why would you do that, Patrick? Because the heart wants what the heart wants. And she had a nice butt. My intention was well, like all our intentions was well. I really, she came at a time in 2016, my brother Michael died, and I was going through a lot of grief, and the house was empty, and I just thought that God put this woman in my life. I truly did, you know. I sponsored it, but what the fuck is, you know. he's like, "Wow, that ain't gonna work." She drinks. I says, "Not a lot," but then when they take off, well, just one time, you know, and we justify and rationalize another person's behavior. And it's been over a year, and I had to obviously apply the steps to that relationship at well, you know. I still think about her. I quit praying for her because my sponsor said, "You've already prayed for her." But just like the other morning, we were going to the airport, Thomas and I, says, we're sort of driving by her neighborhood, and I think about her. You know, I said, "Geez, I wonder who she's sleeping with now." And I said, it'll always be there in some shape or form. And so I met this other girl, and we were chit-chatting, and today I deleted and blocked her because there was just too many red flags. I'm going to pay attention to the red flags today. It really is, you know. So I've been practicing. I'm not advertising, gentlemen. I've been practicing celibacy for over a year now because I don't want to be dating just to date. I'm waiting for the woman that God has designed for me. And the way I'm going to find that out is through her heart, by dating the person, not the item in question. That was clean, wasn't it? Okay, you know what I'm talking about. It's just get to know their heart. Get to know their heart. You know, a person's soul, get to know them. And, you know, it's all about refraining from doing some things here. You know, it's not you know, really not popular against the guy culture in the gym. It's like, "Hey, how many girls did you get this weekend?" Shut up, you know. You know, it's kind of like, that ain't good. So I'm very selective on who I want to date and who I want to be with. You know? So like our literature said, because I'm a big literature fan, one of our favorite rock stars, Mick Jagger, used to say what? "I can't get no satisfaction." Ooh, yeah. So it says that an addict is never satisfied, right? So, which means that there is never enough of anything that is in front of me. Never enough money, property, prestige, leading to the sixth tradition, which is a diversion to my program about me staying clean. I get a job, I want to work it excessively. I want to prove to you that I can be a good worker, that I can make money, that I'm a worthwhile person. I don't know how to moderate. If I knew how to moderate, if you look at your second tradition, we're mismanagers of everything. I can mismanage my time, mismanage my money, mismanage my resources. So if I know as an addict I'm never satisfied, I have to find satisfaction with what is going on. Like I was asked to share here. In my mind, I'm saying, "Oh, I'm going to fuck this up. This is going to be horrible. I'm going to drop the ball." Because it talks about this also. Our expectations of ourselves can be so overwhelming that they cripple us. I have an expectation of myself being up here, that this is going to be the best thing you've ever heard. Oh my God, he was wonderful. I'm going to give up sex and sugar, you know. The other thing is, you have an expectation. And that could be the crippling thing, because people, "Oh, this could be great. You know, this guy from Florida, he's going to be great." And you got expectations. You got your popcorn. You're like, "Okay, what do you got, Mr. Florida boy? You know, we're just waiting, you know, to hear something earth-shattering. This ain't my stuff. It's your stuff. I'm just using my voice and my experience to share your stuff. That's what's going on here." So with the expectations, if I have an expectation, I'll get a resentment. Because my sponsor will say, it's okay to have expectations as long as they're realistic expectations. Pray. Do the best you can and let the results be to God. Okay? Bottom line, if one person hears something tonight that saves their life. Can I get an amen on that one? You save one addict at a time.
That's right.
And then that one addict, guess what he does? Helps out another addict. Helps out another addict. Helps out another addict. And that's why this room is so there. That's why it's so full here. Look at the banners. You know, this is what we're doing. My legacy. I'm real big on a legacy because I'm old. I'm 60 years old. I don't have another 60 years left. So I'm always conscious about what will I be remembered by. I have a son who has the same last name. And I want him to remember me reverently as being a good dad, a person that showed up for his commitments, said what he meant, and meant what he said. On gravestones, tombstones, if you will, they'll always have your date of birth and then a date of death. And in between that is a dash. What will be your dash? It's a little bitty line that defined your life. There's no redos after I'm dead. #, he ain't coming back. When I'm gone, I'm gone. There's only one Patrick out of 80 billion people. What is my contribution to society? What have I done to give back to society? Or have I been a thief? Nothing worse than being a thief in Narcotics Anonymous. The taker, you know who those are? And they say, oh, I don't want to get involved in service. And get involved in service. Help out. Sponsor people. Do things that are right. You know? So I'm all about my legacy. You know, at nighttime, there's this thing in the sky. It's called the moon. We all know what a moon is, right? But the moon has no light. Where does the moon get its light from? Be the moon. Provide the light in the darkness that's out there. It's a dark world, my friends. It's nasty out there. People are just killing each other. It's cold and people are ruthless. Be the light. Be that one person that picks up the litter box. Put the shopping cart back. Hold the door open for the lady. Say please and thank you. Pay for your bill. Don't dine and dash. You know, doing the right things for the right reason. You know, it's not always really fun, but it's the right thing to do. So, that's part of my legacy that I always want to live by. You know, I got caught up in with the symptoms of my disease many, many times. One of those involved lying and manipulating a doctor. So, do you have a minute? I'm going to tell you this story. It's kind of cool. It's a little off color, but oh well. I'm here. So I buy this car. I finally got good enough credit score to buy a brand new car. And I was very pleased with this car. It was a nice car. It was small. It was a I forget what the hell it was. But anyway, it was a new car. You know, it was so long ago and it meant so much to me, I forgot about it already. And I'm here, I got this new car and I'm like, I got the beats going, I got my head, you know, showing up. What's up, what's up, what's up, you know? And I'm so happy, I love this car. And some guy pulls up next to me at a red light. He's got tinted windows. I thought, this car fucking sucks. Because I didn't have tinted windows. I had something different, thought that I found it in tinted windows. So all of a sudden, this great car that I had sucked. Because it didn't have tinted windows. I said, I'm going to get me some tinted windows. So I go get the windows tinted, and up in New York, they're against the law. I get a ticket like immediately. I said, well, what's going on here? He says, it's against the law. I told you my brother was a lawyer. And what do addicts do? We look for loopholes, right? Well, I found a loophole in the law. And what the law says that I could have tinted windows if I had this medical condition, which caused me to break out in hives. I was like, okay, this is good. I'm onto something here. Listen, I'm liking this one. How is it going on here, right? So I read that there's a medical thing called drug-induced photosensitivity. That if you take Motrin and your body reacts to the sun, you break out in hives, you have drug-induced photosensitivity. I said, there it is. So I go to my doctor, you know, and I says, yeah, I got this. I'm breaking out in hives. He says, no, you don't. I said, yeah, I do. I really do. It's bothering me. And he says, I can't write this. I says, you can't or you won't. I'm like, do you want it or do you need it? I says, what do you mean? You can't or you won't? He says, I won't. I says, okay, you're fired. So I found a new doctor. But this time, I'm going to play it up there. So I go to this doctor. I put one of those cowboy hats on, you know, glasses, and I got all this calamine lotion on, and I walk in there. I said, I got this drug-induced photosensitivity. He's like, oh, boy. Now I got his attention. He's looking through the charts there. He says, okay. Well, I believe so. And he writes me a little prescription. And he writes this prescription for drug-induced photosensitivity, and I take it to the DMV. They reject it because it was on a prescription pad. It's got to come from a, what's the guy's skin?
Dermatologist.
Thank you for playing the game. Dermatologist. So I go to a dermatologist, and he reads a previous report. The report says I got drug-induced photosensitivity. And so he writes up a letter that I take to the DMV, and they give me this little sticker. And I qualify for having tinted windows. I have arrived. I beat them at their own game. I was so fucking happy. But then I sold the car like 3 months later. The point of the matter is, do not tell me no. You know, I will go through any lengths. I mean, I'm running around with calamine lotion, thoroughly convincing doctors that I have this medical condition that doesn't exist, you know. So, yeah, it's kind of a funny, embarrassing story, but it just shows the nature of my disease. And, you know, I mean, it's with me wherever I go. It's still with me today. I work with this guy, my name is Craig. He's a really good guy, fantastic friend at work, one of those guys that you just like to see, right? So the place that I work at, I don't want to mention any names, Ace Hardware. The place that I worked at, they sometimes have barbecues. And they have condiments in the refrigerator. And Frank's hot sauce was in there. You don't know what Frank's hot sauce is? Oh, okay, good. I thought I had the wrong crowd. Anyway, it's Frank's hot sauce. It's an upper echelon of hot sauce. It's like, oh, I'm going to take that with me. I'm justifying stealing. This was like 3 months ago, right? Put it in my lunchbox, and next day Craig comes in. I see Craig, what's up, buddy? He says, son of a bitch, somebody took my hot sauce. I says, the motherfuckers. Really? I says, did you look? Did you really look, Craig? He says, yeah, but I'll be through the guy. And I'm going, I says, you know, maybe somebody took it on accident, right? He says, I don't think so. There's a bunch of dicks around here. I says, you know, Craig, I love you so much. You know, I'm thinking I need to get out of work and go to the store and come back and put it there, right? Take some out. So I says, you know, Craig, when they stop at the store, I'll get you some. I go to the store, I buy him some hot sauce, put it in his locker. I said, Craig, took care of that hot sauce issue. He says, yeah, thanks. And I was waiting for a pat on the back for doing something that I should have been doing anyways, right? A couple days later, I'm eating. I'm sitting across the table from him. And I said, Craig, I got something to tell you. I says, that was me that took your hot sauce. He says, I know. The embarrassment because I did something that I know was wrong and I couldn't even admit it to a close friend who's not even in the program. The shame. So whatever shame that you may be feeling, get in line. You're not exempt from it. Coming in here may feel shameful. Admitting that you stole something from a fellow employee could be shameful. But like they say, brothers and sisters, the truth will set you free. It's been an honor and privilege to be here. Thank you so much for investing your time and energies in getting me here. It's been wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, it's truly been an honor. Thank you for allowing me to be your Friday night speaker and open up your commencement.